Well, the title says what it says today. It'll be more like tales and stories and stuff that has happened in our past. And let's get started.
Which land are the Northern Lights?
Well, there you go. So my name is Matti Kivirinta. I'm coming from Quanto Business Solutions, Finland. We also have a section in India, but I am in the Finland section. And as you can see, it's about 3,900 miles from here. Checked it with a circle mapper yesterday. And I'm not kidding. It's cold out there. As you can see, 4, that's 39. That's today, this morning. So about 10 hours ago, when I checked the weather. I started with 101A. In 2007, when I joined Starnet Systems at that moment, it was called. They got then purchased on into and formed Quantel. Started as a developer for our product. Worked with our product about 2 years, and then moved on to an sysadmin / database admin, because right then we didn't really have a database admin slot then. But nowadays, I'm a senior database administrator for Quantel. We actually have two guys in our DBA team, myself and a junior guy who works with completely other technologies than OpenEdge. I also work with other engines like MySQL and MariaDB. I work with Oracle, I work with SQLite, I work with this and that and that. Basically all of we have, plus I do a lot of incident management work, what we do. Well, what is Quantel? Well, as you see, it's only short Quantel over there. So that's our corporate, and I'm just from the little side of it. We're based in Finland, and originating from Finland. We provide systems and services for mobile operators, for their sales, their product management, their customer care, and their billing. And I've had to strip some of the customers out because they won't say anything to you. Rich would have been in the Finnish one. There would have been more, because those ones would say more to our guys in Finland, because they're local. We do have some others outside of Finland, but I'm not authorized to discuss about them or disclose them, because naturally, the operators do not want to much say that who's doing their back end, because then, well, there's some issues with it. With Yoigo, which is a Spanish mobile operator, we started with them from zero. They were going to the market in 2006 December, because their license agreement for their 3G license said they have to be live by the end of 2006. And we did it in about 150 days or 180 days. I can't remember which one it is actually, because I joined the company after. But they're with us still, and they're running about 4 million subscribers, what they're officially saying. I cannot disclose or say anything about it. I do know the exact numbers, but that's what they're. So not bad from starting from zero in a country that you have already three very large operators working on. Disclaimers. Do you love them? So these are the values I will show in the parts over here and the settings I will show. They're from various of our systems. They're not from one and same system. So there's a lot of difference of what the background system is, what we're running, and your mileage may vary. If you're going to go and plug these into your system, that's your problem. Seriously, if something breaks, if it doesn't work, don't call me. I'm not going to come down and fix you right away. Or if I will, it's not going to be free. All right, so what does Quantel really do? We do the web suits, we do all that stuff, but the biggest thing we are running on OpenEdge is our RBS product, the rating and billing system. And that's running on top of OpenEdge. It's a multiple database system, a product that the clients will connect into multiple databases at the same time. So Federated Database, if I'm correct, is the correct name for it. And we process millions of records, new records, every day. So as you can imagine, I mean, all of you have a phone in your pocket. You take it out, you call someone, that's a record. Because we get those phone calls. And we process them in about, say, normally the delay is 5 minutes to 15 minutes from your call. It is in our database, from if you're in the network that we are running. So we're not batch processing them or anything. We push them right in with our ideas that we have. I'm not going to go into that in much detail. Then what do we run? We are running on Linux or Solaris for most of it. Got something else, but we have no Windows. Zero Windows. Largest ever database that I've been running on our site was over 2 terabytes. And that is one single table database with few indexes. 9 to be exact. The largest running database, as you can see, is about, well, comes down to about 1.2 terabytes if I calculate fast correctly. So 1,464 gigabytes. And this is actually in April when I've done the slides originally. I haven't checked it afterwards. But knowing the customer, it's not going to be much more. Because that customer, unfortunately, is leaving us. The daily growth in a single one environment that we have, we are growing about 8.9 gigs at that time. Now we're closer to 9 gigs already. I mean, it's very close to 9 gigs a day what we're running. And that's just growth. So measured from the high water marks moving up. So if you're wondering how I measure it, it's the high water marks, how they're moving up. So I'm calculating those out. And what we have seen in our systems before we made some adjustments, we were going way over 10 gigs. But in that moment, we started seeing some issues because our disk systems just couldn't take it anymore. It was our fault, not the database fault. I see Rich smiling over there. actually, got a nice little DB analyst off the single database. For Dan, this is very, very familiar looking numbers. I've sent these to Dan last year. And it is one table, 1.9 terabytes for the table and 446 gigs for the indexes. If somebody's feeling like calculating, it's about 300 bytes per record. Then that is the call database table, where all the call events and other events are. And on this system where this database is, it is a very, very, very low power on a single thread performance.
How long did DB analysis take?
Well, it was luckily already down at that time, but if I recall correctly, I did put it on a day when I left. I just left the office after I left, and when I came back in the morning, it was not done yet, so over 24 hours. I can say that how much. The backup takes about 56 hours.
I still got that report, Mike, so just send me an email.
It takes 56 hours to back up this database?
Yes. And it is because the single thread performance of the CPU, it's running on a T2 from Spark T2 from Sun. It was that those times, but now it is Oracle. And well, it's not my fault. It was the previous guy who said to the customer, "Oh yeah, it has all this computing power. Just buy it. It'll be great." Well, they bought it, and they were like, "Sorry, it's not that great after all." because what it was before that, it was an UltraSpark 4. Those who know the difference, I mean, the old UltraSpark 4 machine was almost able to beat the new system hands-on if you're running the same number of processes. But as that system has 256 computing threads, you can actually push a lot of stuff in there and it will run happily. It was after the Åland Islands Puck Nordic where Rich was presenting nicely, and I asked, and Index Rebuild, the new options came in, the merge thread and scan threads. So I asked Rich, so you're saying 1.5 times the number of CPUs? I said, I've got this machine that has 256 CPUs, basically. Can I run it? He said, go ahead. I did. Unfortunately, the memory calculation, how to calculate the amount of memory you need, if you do index rebuild all, it's not fun. Because that would have taken 180 gigs of RAM for that database to get started in the old 2B06. That actually got lowered down after multiple tries and test versions, thanks to Rich. Even though he didn't officially know they were coming down to me, but later on he did know, because the support was trying to hide who was testing it, who was not. But those are the little fun little stories that we have. There's some examples of parameters that we use. This is again another call database, another system. It's a Solaris server. A Spark and environment, naturally, because I mean you cannot get in Solaris 86 port of OpenEdge anymore. You could for the older versions. And if you're wondering how much those buffers will come up to, they're about 79.3 gigs.
You know, you can increase the buffer.
Not on this one. This one's still running such an old version, but you're maxed out at that 8192. And as you can see, it's fully replicated, and our usual latency for the replication is 1 to 2 blocks. And considering we push about that database gets about 5 gigs a day growth, and we have no problems. And naturally, as there are calls and other operations done on phones and tablets and stuff like that, they happen to happen during the time when the people are awake. During the night, it's pretty quiet. But of course, as it's old telco, we really don't have any downtime. I mean, everything has to be planned way in ahead, and we have very, very limited time down allowances. I mean, we're talking just a few hours every year that we're doing for something our own. So you might notice there is a general PF, which we use. So we can stick many of the things that are common to all databases. And I know there's already snickering going on, spin of 100,000. Well,
it's a Spark.
Yep, it's a Spark to get the Spark running. It used to be 500,000. Later versions and enough testing has convinced me that I can bring it down. And if I get more testing time, I probably can bring it still down. The LRU skips is actually 300 nowadays. It used to be only 100, but that really saved a heck amount of time on life of me. I mean, I don't have to be working that much anymore. Regarding that, on another system, the customer wanted us to do a migration from a Spark Solaris into Linux x86 Intel platform. There are a few terabytes of disk being spent on that system, and they decided, okay, let's stick the indexes on a Fusion IO. So So, well, we had our little fun runs with that, but we did enough testing, so we got caught the big issues while we're testing. But, so, this Spark system is actually T2 also, like the other one. They bought them about the same time, but they're two different systems, two different customers, basically, but running by the same customer as their sub. And we've been running their print job to get the invoices out on a certain number of processes. Well, for the Spark, it was like, okay, for the Spark, it's fine. I mean, you do just a lot of processes because it can handle it, and it'll actually work faster because the single thread is so poor on performance. So, okay, we're going to an x86 now. We're not going to need that many processes. The one single thread performance on the x86 is far, far more better. So they dropped the process number to less than half. I'm like, oh gosh, this is taking ages and ages. I'm like, the guys are letting the stuff run for 2 hours, and then they call me. Like, what's wrong? What's wrong? I go in, look at the problem, and I was like, okay, we got quite a lot of reading going on, but not much going on end. So LRU skips saved me the day because the guys couldn't stop the printing. They had to get the invoices out on that day. So I just pushed the LRU skips all the way down up to something like a million or plus because I knew how much stuff there was. And then the guys got the invoices in reasonable time. After that, we had time to look what was wrong. It was a horrible amount of dynamic queries being done and dynamic direction of the query questions going into. So it was like function to another, depending what you're calling. So very hard to debug where the hell it's going. But when he got there, finally, okay, so wait a minute, those are not index fields. So we were running about 2 million queries per second on that system. Records being read on that one single table. It's like, what? For seriously nothing.
So you were doing a full table scan?
Yeah. There was all of those processes, the print jobs, were doing a table scan. So the LRU skips saved the day for that moment enough for us to give us time to investigate what was going on. Also, another thing that saved us was buffers, and thanks to Tom. Tom kindly offered me to use this slide when I asked him. We were able to push the whole thing in memory because the new server had plenty of memory, and if it had been going down to the disk and back and forth, well, probably would never seen it. And that's what happened on the previous server because we need not have memory on that one. So it was automatically slowed down by the disk. This is Tom's from like, I don't know how many years.
Four.
And Gus has changed it a couple times, I think.
No, I've used this slide, but I didn't change any of the numbers.
I don't know, I mean, you had a different, it was not this one, it was the other one, it's the block one. Like, you had the difference of preference.
Yeah.
Well, let me get something else. There's knowing your environment. I mean, that's something. I mean, if you have a chance to know, like I do, because I know, we do the installation, we do the software, we do the database configuration. So we have the chance of doing a live, knowing the limitations, we can choose the best options that we're gonna have for what we're getting in our hands with. Because we have a budget, and that IT budget is quite small, to be honest. Our vendor is saying, well, you guys are like hosting partners saying your budget is way too small for us. But with that, you have to really know your limitations if you're working with it. Like, we are on Solaris. For Solaris, you got a couple options for file system. You got the UFS. You got, if you really want to stick your fingers into the Veritas one, VFX, I think it's called. And then there's the ZFS, the Zettabyte file system, which Some of you probably are going like, oh, no, 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 no. Well, we've been running that thing for, let me see now, 7 years. But it really requires you know what you're doing with it. There are many quirks with it. There's many little things that you really need to know. And there's many little things that you need to monitor with it. If you don't monitor the things, your performance might die on you very suddenly. Say you're adding extents. Your extent adding goes 20 seconds, 20 seconds, 20 seconds, 20 seconds, 2 minutes. Like, what? And next, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. So it has its nice little things. Same with on Linux side, you go with X3, X4, if you're brave enough to go to X4, and XFS. We've actually gone to an XFS, and the reason being is EXT3 and 4 have a locking issue. Any of you know it. If you're writing into a block, that block is locked and there's no queue in it. It's footex lock. So you got a lot of stuff, nasty stuff going on the background. There's also knowing the limits of your environment, and there can be a lot of stuff like kernel tuning that you might have to do to get the shared memories enough large, get the semaphore numbers enough large. Getting the block sizes right for your system. I mean, you can run 8 on Linux, but then you're doing 2 IOs for every call. I mean, you're getting more data, but depending on what you got on the other end, how it's going over the wire or whatever you got going to whatever, you might be killing your SAN or your fabrics with just traffic that you're not really using. Also, one big thing is A time, the access time. If you're still writing those for nothing on a database server, don't do it. I mean, drop the A time. It's very simple to do on almost any file system if you can do it. I'm not talking about Windows. I don't think Windows actually even writes that stuff. Adam thought about numbers. We don't need no stinking numbers. But I say, do keep some kind of history. If you don't have any kind of history of what your system is doing or what's going on, how are you going to start looking where your problem is? So here we got a real life sample. On 28th of January, we had a nice backup of the same, I mean, it's all from the same database. Had 2 hours, 11 minutes going on in backup. On the 8th of February, it took hour 54, so about the same. It's okay, no problem. Then 10 days later, we're talking 7 hours. Same database, so you can see it's about the same size. So, what happened? Anyone put any guesses up?
Different stuff running while the backup is going on.
Nope.
Must have been.
Well, it's a fact that it's a different time.
It's a different time, yes. But that was actually a consequence of the previous backup running late, too. And another backup running over the time it used to. What happened is, a few days before the last backup.
The RAID 5 array was recovering.
Well, it has to do with disks. We had done a system patching, so we had updated the operating system. And this is a Solaris with Zettabyte file system. And they had a nice little nasty bug in it, which meant Every time it needed to flush something out of the write cache, the arc cache, it would flush the whole darn buffer. So we're talking a few gigs. Even it didn't need to do the whole thing. Just would have needed to do just a couple blocks. It was doing the whole thing. It took us with support a couple months to get this done. And we engaged Progress on this. We engaged Oracle. We engaged our SAN vendor. And it was a nice little pointing fingers, different directions. Especially Oracle support started the finger pointing first. No, it has to be Pro. Well, we said, we need to update the Progress version at that time. We didn't do anything to that. Can't be. It's your guys' fault. Then we were able to prove it to them enough many times that, it's your guys' fault.
Was it Solaris bug finally?
Yeah. It was the ZFS file system handling cache handling bug.
So the solution was to move to Linux, right?
No.
Well, why not? CPUs are faster, disks are faster.
No, this is actually a high-end Spark server. That's what I said.
So Linux will only be twice as fast than it?
No, actually, this one is about on par with any Linux that I know. So I've done quite a many benchmarks during the last couple of years. With different vendors, different kind of systems, different CPU architectures that are available. Different
kind of. This was a T2?
No, this is actually an M8.
Oh.
Yeah, this is a high-end Solaris box. We've got this one. This is actually a checkpoint slide I included for Finland, because not many of them will actually look into the numbers. And some of them actually have no idea that there is the debug thing, which will actually give you a bit more. But the bigger issue here is do keep an eye on of your checkpoints, at sometimes at least. Because if they're going too tight, you probably are not going to be able to get the stuff out into the disk on time, and then you will have flushes. And then you got nice little surprises. People saying, it's very slow sometimes, it's very, very fast sometimes. Not much on that. Still continuing on the history and the usage. Keeping numbers up, so you have something to compare when you have a problem and other stuff. These are the tables I really use a lot. Act summary. That's a combined total of single days values. It's actually, I wouldn't have those numbers unless Jarmo from Progress Finland called me up and said, hey, we're doing this little thing internally, and would you happen to have any numbers how much you guys are doing processing and doing any reads or any transactions or something like that? Let me see what I pull up to you. So this is something I pulled up to him, and I bet Rich is seeing it. I can see it from his face. He's seeing it somewhere. There's some internal presentation. So about 15 billion DB reads and 7 million record reads per day. And this is not even really a busy day. We've had a lot busier days. For me, if I see numbers going sky high, then usually the good part is I can go to the guy who's causing the numbers and say, what are you doing? We have something that we need to fix now. But in many cases, that's unfortunately not possible, as they're not either developing the software, they have no contact in the software, no idea what's going on in there. But that's all the fun. And I mean, if you really want more out of your system, that's basically the line where it's the easiest way to go. I mean, buy new hardware. If you got a 20-year-old machine over there, heck, let's get a maybe 5-year-old. It'll be still faster, most likely. You might get screwed, though, but that's the easiest way, though, to get. Operating systems provide you more speed. I mean, you have an old Linux, you're probably running EX3 or something very fancy file system, hopefully not Razer, then you might get X4, it might get a bit more speed, or XFS, and the XFS you can get far more speed. Regarding, of course, you know how to set it up correct, and you know it's quirks. It has a few little things, but nothing compared to the Cellebyte file system that is for Solaris, which you can actually get on Linux nowadays too, but I would not, I mean, no, not for Linux. And OpenEdge, well, we hear all the stuff that Rich and other guys, Gus and others, work on, make better, say the index rebuild for 10.2b.06, I think it was, or 0.5 when the new options came up. That saved my day. I probably would have been running index rebuild for, say, about 3 days for a 300 gig database when I had to do a dump, partial dump and load into a new database. That's the one that I showed in the beginning, the 2 terabyte one. We sliced off part of it, made a new one, and that's actually the 1.4 nowadays. And the previous guy running with the previous options that you had with index rebuild, it took a bit over 4 days to get the 300 gigs from out and get it all good to go. So the customer was not happy when it was running 4 days. So that's why they scheduled to start the work on Thursday at 8 p.m. and be done on Monday early morning, like 8, and with an extra runoff time till Tuesday morning. Well, I was already on Saturday midday. I was with my colleagues drinking beer because I did not have to work anymore at that moment because everything was fine. Database were up, the application was up, that was fine. So do update if you have a chance. But do remember to test it on something else in your production. It's the sickest thing you can do is drop it in. Bye. The good old classic Friday night deployment. You do it just 5 minutes before you're going home. Drop the application in. Bye, guys.
5 minutes before you go on vacation.
Or bar.
Because you know it's going to work just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it works. All right. So, as I said, I work with other technologies also, such as Maria and others. So I'm going to talk something else. First one I really want to emphasize is the time zone variable. It's an environment variable that you can set, and especially on Linux, if you have not set it, it will actually cost you an extra IO operation and system call. And with certain versions of the Linux builds and some Linuxes, the glibc library has a very nasty bug in it. If you send a signal into the process that is calling that local time, it will go into a continuous, I mean, never-ending loop, because it will fire up a FUSIX, which is same as mutex on the Unix world, and it will never come out because it tries to handle the signal after it has triggered the FUSIX. So what you can do then? Well, only option after that is basically kill 9 for that session and hope it does not bring the database down, because it will actually refuse every other signal. And how do you set it? Well, that's one way to do it. You can do it in your profile D. You can make a file that you can stick expert DC is equal whatever your time zone is. Mine is naturally my home time zone, even though I don't live in Helsinki. I live in Jyväskylä, which is about three and a half, four hours away from Helsinki. But that's a nice little thing. And just to prove it, a short little piece of 4GL. Pause today and pause. This is actually the boss call. And you see, there is when you have no TC set, it will actually do a system call.
Lovely.
And that system call might cost you quite a lot if you do enough. I mean, I don't know how many developers we got here, but quite a classic piece of code we used to have is assign some new date equals and today, so month, today, day, today, year, today. So what happens there, it's actually calling the same function again and again, and you go, so you get a system call every time. That's actually, I was thinking about lodging a ticket in, that could we get an R code compiler change that it would optimize the 2 days into one call and drop it if it's in the same assign. I'm not sure if that's possible, but that's something I'm planning on dropping in someday when I have a little less things
to do. There's a programming, of course it's possible.
Yeah. But just to show the point, it's because we ran into this problem and I was really wondering what's going on. Why are these sessions freezing up? And I asked, what did you do? I hit Control C. Oops. All right. And we got really a recent lab case for me. This took me a couple of days to figure out what was really happening. So we have a web application thing going on, and it has a MariaDB on its back. And we have a proxy in there, a MySQL proxy, that we push all the connections through so we can actually see what's going on. And that adds about less than 200 milliseconds, or give or take, delay on it. So basically nothing when you consider the amount of good things you get, like seeing the guys who are pushing queries that have 25 joins in them. Yeah, there's nothing new in our system, as the guys are using a web framework that generates the queries for them by themselves, and they just put filters and filter and filter. Oh, it'll be nice filtering a filter. Oh, there we go. So what started happening? During the night, everything is nice and calm, of course, because no traffic. And then we start getting queues. The calls are getting queued on the application server during the day. This doesn't sound right. I mean, now there's something wrong. It was just working fine. Unfortunately, we had just had a deployment just before. So we were, hey, the deployment has something wrong. The guys are looking at the code. The guys are looking at code. Nothing found there. And I look at the response time, or the generation times for the responses, and those are starting to grow up. And then I see it's also our other applications that are connecting into the same database. They're starting to see same things over there. And then I see also that the number of connections to the database, because this application has its little fun little quirk thing, they start to go up and up and up. But still, if I go in to the database, do a couple of queries that I've done before, so I have the time, good time in front of it, and the timings look all right. And I see the queries per minute, they're still the same, or per second also, they're looking about the same as the previous days. So. And we've seen way higher number of queries in the similar time frame. I think it was just fine. So where's the problem? We're like looking at each other and wondering with the infrastructure guys, do we have some network issue? Do we have something wrong with our web platform? Well, as you can see before, I've put in some nice little system call printouts. Well, that actually was the thing that really gave it out to me, what was going on. So you can read, if you're able to read enough, you can see there's a select for table X, and it's a write call. So we're pushing an SQL query into the server, and let's see, didn't really take anything. And then we get a response back, and okay, that's not really good. 0.005 seconds. Quite long. But that's not the worst case. That's just a response. Then when we ask the server, are there any more responses? We're talking about the same time. I mean, the result set is still long. This was actually still on when it was still nice and when it was starting up to show the problem. When it's really during the peak hours, we're seeing 0.2 seconds being the response times for all of those connections. So, where are we? How do we fix it? Well, the application, as I say, it was a bit quirky. It's a Django application, so it's running on Python. And it has a habit of, and by default, it is share nothing by default. So you're not sharing a database connection between different page loads. So you're actually creating a connection into the database, doing a queries for the page, and disconnecting. Because of this, we're starting to see that on the database server, the netstat would give me over 6,000 connections in different states. Active connections, dying connections, waiting. So what was happening, the proxy that we were using just couldn't take it anymore. It was just throwing those connections on and off, on and off, on and off, and same time trying to answer the queries. So actually this can be applied down to the OpenEdge side. If you just get into this kind of situation that you're logging in, logging out, like not. Luckily, we could correct this by adding a new port, new proxy onto the server. And how did it look after that? This is from peak hour.
Now this proxy was just for your monitoring, right?
Yeah. So we could see the number of queries being sent and how long they were taking, how big the queries were, how much is being returned. It's been used a lot by a lot of companies. So, especially the reply for there are no more results left. We're going from 0.02 seconds to 0.0001. After this, customer called me up. Matti, I'm gonna buy you the biggest whiskey bottle I can find. But the problem is, you have to haul it back. And the customer is not infinite. Alrighty.
How do you pronounce that?
Kysymyksiä. Kysymyksiä. Any questions? All right, thank you. Kiitos. Oh, gosh.